Immersive cultural enrichment on board and on shore. Freshly prepared regional cuisine. Viking sails the rivers of the world and takes travelers to the heart of iconic destinations. Discover more at viking.com.
Learn how to plan, invest, and live smarter with the Raymond James For What It's Worth podcast. Featuring insights from leading professionals, you'll get the latest in wealth management, market commentary, and engaging research. Listen today at raymondjames.com/podcast.
I'm Jace Lacob, and you're listening to a special bonus episode of Masterpiece Studio. After Poldark's stunning third season finale last year, who could have thought that head writer Debbie Horsfield's already dramatic series could outdrama itself? But as the fourth season wraps up, it's clear Horsfield and Poldark have drama to spare.
I'm here to inquire after Mrs. Warlegg.
Turn that man away!
George, for God's sake, can we not put aside our quarrels at a time of sickness? I am concerned for Elizabeth and will not leave until you tell me how she is.
Elizabeth? Oh. No, Elizabeth is dead.
With Elizabeth dead, Ross and George are even more at war. But it's not all doom and gloom. After two seasons of heartbreak and horror, Morwenna and Drake are finally married.
Marry me. Be my wife. In name only, I'll never ask you for more. Do we not love me?
Of course I love you. This has never been just about love.
But it has. And can only ever be.
Horsfield could easily credit novelist Winston Graham's source material for the emotional fourth season conclusion, but she's also more than ready to take the drama to new heights. In a special bonus episode of the podcast, Horsfield reflects on Poldark's fourth season and looks ahead to the fifth and final season of her series. And this week we are joined again by Poldark creator Debbie Horsfield. Welcome.
Hello, hi.
This episode marks the death of Elizabeth. What was behind the decision to end the season on this note, and how does it mark a true turning point for the show?
Well, that is how the seventh book, The Angry Tide, ends. So it's a very powerful ending in the book, and we felt we needed to do it full justice. It is the end of an era in terms of Elizabeth has been such a strong presence during the whole of the series that we've had, and in the books she is always there in Demelza's mind, in Ross's mind, in George's mind. She's such a powerful figure, and actually when I was coming to write the scenes in which she died, I actually found myself getting incredibly upset, as if I was saying goodbye to a favourite real person, and I actually made myself cry writing them.
I mean, in that respect, obviously Elizabeth is a fictional character. Hayter Reed is a real-life person playing mm-hmm. her. How difficult was it to say goodbye then to Hayter Reed?
Oh, it's very difficult when you have to say goodbye to any character, but Hayter in particular, you know, she's been there from the beginning, and she is so wonderful, and she is actually magnificent in series four, actually. You saw Elizabeth growing in strength at the end of series three, and that continues into series four, and she will be very much missed.
I love how this episode begins with a flashback to a much happier time before Ross left for America, which allows us not only to see a young Ross and Elizabeth in love, but also our dearly departed characters like Agatha and Francis.
Is it true? You're enlisting?
62nd Regiment of foot.
No, Ross, don't say so. Francis, help me persuade him.
Persuade my father. It's his idea.
Only to save you from the gallows.
Well, I know someone who isn't impressed.
What's the matter with the men of this family?
It'll be 6 months at the most, Aunt. You'll hardly know I'm gone.
Where did the idea for this flashback come from?
Well, it was my idea because, obviously, the story ends with the death of Elizabeth. And I was reminded what a key part she had played, not just in Ross's life, but that three men had been in love with her, Ross, Francis and George. And, you know, Winston Graham makes it very clear, George and Francis never thought they were in with a chance. And yet, actually, in the end, all three of those men had a relationship with her. And so I just wanted to revisit that and in order to give that those death scenes, to give them all the power that they could and should have by reminding us as an audience how key Elizabeth had been to those three men.
The scene also seems to show us one of the causes for the rivalry between Ross, George and Francis, as each, as we say, appears to be in love with Elizabeth in their own right. At its heart, do you see Poldark as perhaps being about greed of both a monetary and a sexual nature?
There are certain elements of greed of a monetary nature, but I wouldn't say, I don't know, maybe I would call it possessiveness. Maybe I'd call it obsession. I mean, clearly George was obsessed with possessing Elizabeth. And in a way, you know, Ross's feelings could sometimes be seen to verge on an obsession as well. It's less greed, it's more possessiveness.
Elizabeth seals her fate here by going to the doctor to obtain ergot in order to bring about a premature birth. Was this a fairly common practice at the time for women who might be in a similar situation?
Apparently, yes. Apparently, that's an old remedy. There wasn't room to have the whole scene that Winston Graham wrote, but there's a very long section in which the physician explains that if she feels that something is going wrong, she has to summon her physician and tell him what she's taken, because apparently the dosage had to be so precise. And yes, it very, very easily could go wrong, and unfortunately did.
I asked Haida about this the other day, but I'd be curious about your own response. Why doesn't Elizabeth tell Dwight about the ergot, given that the doctor had warned her about those complications?
Gosh, I think probably that she didn't want to admit, even to Dwight, what she had done. It's a strange one, really. And I suppose there is no guarantee that he would have been able to do anything to reverse it. She did. The doctor was clear with her that she should say something straight away. Initially, the doctor that was called in was not Dwight. It was Dr. Choke. He would be the last person she would want to confide that to. And by the time Dwight came, it was probably too late and she probably knew it.
I was shocked here that Elizabeth doesn't have this very long, drawn-out death scene, but actually sort of very quietly goes into the night. What was behind the decision to have Ross find out at the same time as the audience that Elizabeth had died?
That's the book, actually. It's the most awful moment in the book where he comes round to ask after her health, and George just sort of lashes him with this, "Oh, Elizabeth's dead." Which is George's ultimate weapon, really, to basically lob that grenade at Ross, even in that moment of his own hideous grief. But the book does it just beautifully, so we've basically just taken that.
I mean, it is much more emotionally wrenching in a way that Ross doesn't get to say goodbye to his first love, and George is there for that moment.
Yeah, and I think actually it's incredibly moving that George is, because, you know, there's been a lot of debate about, does George really love Elizabeth, or is she just a possession to him? Is she just a trophy? But I have always felt that in as much as George is capable of loving anyone, he does love Elizabeth, and he is grief-stricken. I mean, everything that he has aimed for and achieved, he did it because of her, for her sake. And now when he's got everything, you know, he's even on the verge of becoming Sir George Warleggan. You know, he's got a second child whose paternity there can be no doubt about. He has absolutely everything he could wish for. And then it's all taken away because the person that it matters most to have the approval of has gone.
Before this next question, a brief word from our sponsors.
Ocean voyages, expeditions, river journeys. Viking is dedicated to bringing travelers closer to the destination, offering a small ship experience and a shore excursion in every port. Learn more at viking.com. Coming up next on Masterpiece on PBS, Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office continues Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, followed by the finale of Alice and Jack at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central.
Well, the death of Elizabeth does bring Ross and Demelza finally together again after a season of various trials. Are these two finally now at peace with one another?
I think that from now on, and the books are very clear about this, they're a team. That sounds quite unromantic, but personally, I think it's the most romantic thing to be writing about a relationship which has longevity, where the two people involved have a bond which carries them through decades and decades, more children, more turmoil, but they remain steadfastly together. Personally, that's my idea of romance, not just, the kind of heady walks along the cliffs that we saw in series one. I think this story of a real, genuine marriage is genuinely romantic because it is real. It's founded on a genuine bond and a depth of love.
I love the scene at the churchyard between Geoffrey Charles and Verity.
She was not a Wallagan.
No. She was a Poldark.
It's a very small moment, but it says so much about the rivalries of this show. Are the battle lines being drawn here in this scene?
In a way, yes, because it's very clear that Geoffrey Charles is never going to be a fan of George. George was generous to Geoffrey Charles when he was younger, but it was always a means to an end to gain Elizabeth's favour because he knew how important Geoffrey Charles was to Elizabeth. So that rivalry between the Poldarks and the Wallagans continues right up to book 12.
Looking back at this season as a whole, do you have a favourite scene?
I think I enjoy it more as I go on, to be honest. And I think this is my favourite series, to be honest. I think it takes us to places that we haven't been before, but it also re-establishes some of the things that we loved about the earlier series. Most particularly, it reconnects Ross and Demelza in a big way. So I think probably it will be a two-hander between Ross and Demelza where they are finally reconnecting again, because both of those, they re-establish that deep, deep connection between the two of them.
I loved her once, as well you know. And there's a part of me that will always think of her with affection, but I realized that day that she never was and never could be what you are to me. Indispensable. Irreplaceable.
You tell me this now because
I think perhaps I've taken you for granted. Assumed you knew what to me was obvious, that you are the better part of me.
I think perhaps I've been guilty of the same.
Now, after what I would call a truly star-crossed romance, Morwenna and Drake finally get married in this episode. Do you think that the unsolved murder of Aussie could come back to haunt them, or is it finally smooth sailing ahead for these two?
It's not necessarily smooth sailing ahead because Morwenna is very traumatized from her marriage to Aussie. And I mean, that is genuine post-traumatic stress disorder that she is dealing with there. And that's not something that's going to go away in a hurry. So there will be challenges ahead. But in terms of will Drake ever be blamed for the death of Aussie? Happily, no.
That's good to hear. What makes a Debbie Horsfield show a Debbie Horsfield show?
I come from quite a big family. I come from a family of lots of girls. I come from a family where my parents were married for over 40 years. So I think that I tend to write about relationships. I tend to be quite realistic but optimistic about relationships. I tend to write about groups of women quite a lot, actually. Often in my own contemporary work, it's in workplace settings. But I think that the concerns and the subjects and the territories that interest me are not that dissimilar to the ones in Poldark. I'm fascinated by human relations and what makes people tick and what makes them behave in extreme ways. And that's the same whether it's the 18th century or the 21st century.
What can you tell us about your upcoming UK drama, Age Before Beauty?
Yes, couldn't be more different to Poldark. The precinct of it, though not necessarily the what we actually deal with in the story. It's set in a kind of beauty parlour which specialises in anti-ageing treatments. However, it's not the treatments that we are dealing with. We're talking about a family saga, multi-generational, where we're looking at what the expectations are that we have of people at various ages. I think it was inspired actually by an article I read in a paper saying what you can and can't wear at what age. So apparently you can never wear leather trousers after the age of 19 if you're not over 6 foot tall. You can't have long hair after 37. You can't wear a bikini after 32. It was so prescriptive and ludicrous that I thought there's got to be a series here about how do people either conform to those so-called rules or how do they kind of buck the trend. So we're looking at three generations of a family who all work in the same business and how they contradict expectations, I suppose.
I can't wait for that. Debbie Horsfield, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And just as Poldark wraps up for the year, so too will Masterpiece Studio. On the other side of the new year, we'll be back with new episodes and new interviews for returning series like Victoria, Unforgotten, and Grantchester, and for brand new series like Mrs. Wilson. And in February, we're launching Mining Poldark, Masterpiece Studio's brand new Poldark recap podcast featuring Robin Ellis, the original Ross Poldark from the 1970s adaptation of the series.
He's a dark horse. He's unpredictable, in other words. And I think it's the unpredictability which Elizabeth certainly experiences in the first chat they have puts her off. I think it really, he's changed from that much blander character that left for the war.
Check your podcast feeds in the weeks ahead for a special preview of the new series. And be sure and subscribe to the new podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Radio Public, or wherever else you subscribe to podcasts. Masterpiece Studio is hosted by me, Jace Lacob, and produced by Nick Anderson. Alicia Baitoop is our editor. Suzanne Simpson is our executive producer. The executive producer of Masterpiece is Rebecca Eaton. Sponsors for Masterpiece on PBS are Viking Cruises, Raymond James, and the Masterpiece Trust.